Hey, 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 this is First Coast Connect. I'm Al Letson, sitting in the big chair, coming to you live from Studio 2 at WJCT. Today, we're talking to everyday people about Jacksonville's Southside neighborhood. And if you have an itch to stitch, the Quilt Fest Jacksonville kicks off Thursday, plus a recap of the Jaguars' win yesterday over Indianapolis. But first, how y'all doing today? You good? It's a Monday. I know. Get your coffee, get into work, do all the things you got to do. But hey, listen, the weekend is only 4 days away. I mean, that's on the plus side. We're good, right? All right. Now, before we dive in, you can call and join the conversation at 549-2937. You can tweet us at FCC on air. You can email us at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. So in our Everyday People Roundtable, we're back at it with neighbors from the South Side of Jacksonville. They aren't journalists or political pundits. They're everyday people just like you and me. So first off, let's get the theme music going.
Who are the people in your neighborhood?
In your neighborhood. In your neighborhood. Oh. And one day I'm going to get the entire panel to sing with me. Like, I didn't put anybody on the spot today. They're watching me sing. But next time, whoever comes in here next time, they're going to have to sing the theme song with me. So let's welcome our panelists today. We've got Nana Hammond, owner and chef at Jack's Bread Company. Hello, Nana.
Hello.
How are you today?
Doing very well, thank you.
Good. And then we've got Susan Jenkins, former city council member of District 4 and longtime resident. Hello, Suzanne.
Good morning.
And we've got Kalila Ritchie, a college student and resident of the South Side. Hello, Kalila.
Good morning. Good morning.
I love your name. It just rolls off the tongue
beautifully. I appreciate it.
And David Reed, longtime and current resident. David, how you doing, sir?
I'm wonderful. Thank you.
All right. So we are talking about the South Side. I think the idea of these panels that we've been putting together is to really like try to connect all of Jacksonville with all of Jacksonville. And the way we decided to do that is kind of do deep dives into neighborhoods. So just to kick it off, I would say, what's your favorite thing about living and working on the South Side of Jacksonville?
So I picked the South Side of Jacksonville for the location of my business, mainly to do with accessibility. Because I think it's quite central and easily accessible from all different parts of Jacksonville. It also has a lot of traffic. On top of that, there is the residential side of the South Side and also the businesses that actually reside there as well. So for my business that does wholesale, retail and catering, it gives us a really good amount of customer base.
Yeah. Suzanne, how about representing the South Side? What was that like?
That was interesting. And when I ran in 98 to serve from 99 to 2007, my district went from downtown to San Pablo. And it had all the different neighborhoods. So I really had urban, suburban, and rural.
Yeah.
And the issues were different for each group. For downtown, it was revitalization and the older neighborhoods, the first ring around them. The same thing. And then as you go further out, it was traffic and accessibility.
And over the time that you represented it and beyond that, what have you seen change in the South Side?
Well, once I got on council, the mayor, Delaney, and I really had many discussions about how to revitalize older neighborhoods so they didn't have to fail before we saved them. And one of the things we came up with was the town center projects, where these commercial corridors to these neighborhoods could get some help, because they are the front doors to the neighborhoods. And he and I worked on that and came to fruition. And then the sheriff's office also worked on utilizing the different apartment communities and working with them to help them have stable communities within the apartment complex. Because again, they're a big part of neighborhoods as well. And you have to have all those working together in order to be successful and either maintain what you have or bring it up.
Yeah.
And it's a very difficult and hard thing to do. It's like spinning plates and having different lines of them and keep them all going. But it takes that kind of commitment and vision for all our elected officials and the people who work for them in the city departments to make this happen.
Yeah. Kalila, were you born and raised on the South Side?
Yes. So I was actually born at Ascension St. Vincent's Hospital. So right there off of Belfort. So to answer your question, I would say my favorite part of living on the South Side would definitely be accessibility. Like, it's next to everything. And I've lived on every single side of Jacksonville at this point, and Southside is by far my favorite. Yeah. I love being so close to everything. Like, it's everything's like a 20-25 minute drive, if that. But also too, I think me being a student, that plays like a huge role in like my student life as well, because like as a student, it's so easy to get so caught up in you just being in school that you kind of forget to also live and like be in your 20s. And so I think with me living on the South Side, I've had a lot more events that I could go to. There's like the beaches, there's Riverside, isn't that far away. I don't know, it's a lot of fun, I would say.
David, how long have you lived on the South Side?
Since 1981.
Wow, that's a long time.
For a piece.
Yeah. So why have you stayed so long? What is it that you love about it?
It's just home, you know. It's home, and I love the area. I love the diversity and the richness of it. And like she said, it's close to everything, just about. Lots of great places in Jacksonville, but just the South Side's been home to me for the longest time.
I would say that, like, I worked at the Apple Store on the Town Center when it first opened. Which was, you know, it was really strange working at the Apple Store back then, because Apple dominates now, but back then the world was a Windows world, and people would come into the store like very hesitantly, like, what is this weird thing? It's kind of cool, but it's weird. And the Town Center felt like, I don't know, it felt like it was a crown jewel. And you go back, when I go to the Town Center now, I'm always like blown away at how much it's grown versus like where it was when it first started. Which doesn't seem like it's happening in other parts of towns. Like, shopping centers generally seem to like be dying, but the Town Center is just booming.
Well, it was built, and I was on council when we approved that project to go and be built there. And it was built not just for the South Side, but also for St. John's County. There was a big debate on, are we focusing on downtown or are we creating a new one? Mm-hmm. And how do they compete? And, you know, there was a lot of people who were not for that Town Center project because they felt we should be focusing on bringing those companies and businesses downtown. Mm-hmm. But it got built, and I saw the benefits as well as the downside, because again, downtown was still in my district at that time. But Jacksonville is a huge city, and we are very diverse, and this brought an option to the old South Side neighborhoods to become popular again because they're going to be near it, as well as the new stuff that was coming in to be built and all the communities that have built since then.
Mm-hmm. David, what have been the changes that you've seen since you've been there so long?
The big ones have been Town Center, Tinseltown, and the changes over at Regency. A lot of the other stuff's a little bit of build out, but, you know, especially you get down farther toward E-Town. I don't know if that's South Side, but the Bay Meadows area and stuff has grown out. But, otherwise, the main portions there in the center, it's not a huge amount of changes, nothing terrible. It's kind of reminds me of what it used to be like back in the 80s.
Yeah. Nana, I did a little bit of research, and then also your lovely accent. Like, obviously not from Jacksonville. You don't talk like us. But like, what made you decide to settle in Jacksonville and then specifically the South Side? Because, I remember... Originally, I am from New Jersey, moved down here when I was about 10 years old. And of course, when you move to a city, you don't really know like where your place is going to be until you've lived a little bit. Mm-hmm. Obviously, at 11 years old, I had no say in where I was going to live. But just, you know, curious, like how you decided on the South Side.
Right. So I actually live in St. John's County.
Mm-hmm.
But the first kitchen that I rented out to start my small business was on Old Kings Road South.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sharing a kitchen there with a very good friend of mine. She owns the Little Black Box, another small business. And I outgrew that space and I moved on to Phillips Highway. I think the location that we're at right now, which is on Bay Meadows Road, is just very central. And it's the accessibility for me. The I-95 is just around the corner. You can actually get onto Bay Meadows from the 295. Phillips Highway is right there, and there's a lot of commuters that actually go through. So for us, it was trying to find a location where we can get the morning traffic coming in. We can get the morning traffic coming in, and also on the way out, people leaving to go home can actually pass through, and also the businesses. There's a lot of business presence there. So it goes very well for us in terms of doing catering for meetings and conferences. And there are hotels that actually buy from us on wholesale. So it was very good. I think it's more like the transportation and the easy accessibility.
It kind of feels like a nexus for you. Like, exactly. Like everything kind of goes through and around.
It's like 20 minutes or 15 minutes really to downtown. St. John's County is another 20 minutes or so. It's, you can get to the north side quite fast. Because the interstate is right there.
You can join the conversation at 549-2937. You can tweet us at FCC on air. And First Coast Connect at WJCT.org. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We're going to go to the phones. We've got John on the south side. John, how are you today?
Well, good morning, Al, and welcome to your south side panel. Gosh, I have to give a special shout out to Suzanne Jenkins, former District 4 City Council representative back in 99. You know, we had also the Preservation Project. But what I want to extend to you and all your Southside panelists, have you ever kayaked from the Beach Boulevard boat ramp south towards the old Skinner's Dairy, Bowden Road? Because that is an unbelievable jewel for our waterways in Jacksonville. And you're going to hear so much with all these recent reports about how public access to our waterways is probably the worst it's ever been in Jacksonville right now. But it can change. But I do want to extend that invitation to all of your guests. And once you see that waterway, and first of all, have any of you experienced that? Because it is a bucket list.
I have not, although I have to say I was talking about going kayaking this weekend, so it is now on my list.
Well, I'll take you. So, all right. And then we'll go to whatever restaurant you want to.
I will let our panelists tell me what restaurant to go to. Anybody, any thoughts, Southside restaurants, favorites?
Currently, mine is Firebirds or Green Papaya. Green Papaya is
Green Papaya like
a staple
fire.
For me lately.
Yes,
like,
I love
freshest Green Papaya. Sushi I think I've had in a very long time.
Yes, yes. John, thank you so much for your call.
Ask if they've gone.
Yeah. Okay, absolutely. Panelists, have you done that kayaking yet?
I haven't. I have definitely been by there several times, and I have lots of friends who've done it. I have a problem that it's hard for me to get in a kayak now, so yeah. I won't be able to do it. But if I could, I would. And he's right. It is beautiful. And that's the great thing about our city is the diversity we have and the preservation projects we've put together that people can enjoy it. And we are hopefully opening up more access to our preservation projects and our waterways.
So my producer, Stacy the Brain, put in the questions that the South Side has its own mascot. What's the story behind the dinosaur? But I never thought of the dinosaur as the South Side mascot. I feel like that's my mascot. That's a Jacksonville mascot. I don't know. Do you guys think that's specifically South Side or is that all of Jacksonville?
We did it one time because that was Goonie Golf.
Yeah.
And
I
that's
remember.
Where we all went. And they also had go-karts.
Yeah,
so
I remember. I remember.
Real go-karts.
Yes.
I know.
Real go-karts.
Go-karts, you thought you might die in. Yes. Right? Like, I remember. No, I remember taking that turn one time going, woo, this is not for the faint of heart. Like,
I'm glad that all of Jacksonville feels like that now because that shows that, you know, we can be bigger than just our side of the city.
Yeah.
So, but it is iconic. And for years, we hoped that when they built that, they would keep the dinosaur, and they did.
Yeah, we're
glad to share it with the rest of the city.
Okay, so originally it was yours.
Yes.
And you're sharing it with the rest of the city. All right. I'll let you have that. What do you think some of the challenges are on the South Side? Like, what is that area of town struggling with?
I personally would definitely say like resources. Like I feel like I don't really see a lot of shelters. I don't really see like a lot of food banks. I'm not seeing any low income housing. Like it's all luxury apartments. It's all like, but I guess nowadays people want to feel like VIP everywhere they go. Like they want to feel like a celebrity. And so I think the South Side just kind of lacks a little humanity. Like I feel like I've noticed there's not even that much like sidewalks, which is an odd thing to have noticed, but like it's not. There's lots of traffic and there's lots of everything, but there's just not enough just like resources for people who don't want to live on the North Side, people who don't want to live on the West Side, people who want to stay on the South Side but just can't afford to stay on the South Side. I think they should also have a place on the South Side, and I think that's a huge thing that it lacks.
Yeah, Suzanne, you're nodding in agreement.
She's right. We built it out for traffic and cars to take you where you want to go, but we didn't pay attention to bicyclists and pedestrians, and we have not paid attention to the affordable housing aspect. And if you go back now and look at San Marco, I mean, I've been here since 1970, so I remember when San Marco was a little dusty, dirty, and fallen down. And you go back and look at it now, they have the quadruplexes, they have the affordable housing built in, and we don't do that anymore. If you're looking at what's being put up, it's massive in scale, and it's not affordable. And if we don't pay attention to that, we're just building future deserts because we can't support it. We don't have the resources, the places to go to get by bike or bus or walking. We built for the cars, and we need to pay attention and change that. And it's not too late. We can do it. We can claim that back.
It feels like what the earlier caller was talking about with the waterways.
Yes.
And basically like that water access has been cut off significantly. Like all of that ties into the same thing. It's like but really we should be talking about like developers are developing a world that Kalila's point is a world that caters to people and people who want to feel like they are celebrities, which is like all of us at some. I mean,
which
listen,
is, yeah, which like, is I'm like not, all of us at a certain point.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I don't want to like. I got like Sky Miles on Delta. I like the fact,
and I feel the same way. Right. Like I love luxury. I'm the kind of girl. I pay for luxury. I pay for convenience. Why? Because I have it, but there's some people who don't have
it. Right, exactly.
And so it's like, I think that's a huge, huge, huge thing that I think developers all around Jacksonville just are not noticing, that not everybody has money.
Well, right? it feels like that's not really in developers' purview, right?
Well, I wouldn't even say developers.
It's a city.
It's a city.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I agree. But even like I will say, I don't know, like I loved how recently like Donna Deegan has like these cooling stations, and it just goes to show like, there is that, like, you guys can pour into the neighborhood if you choose to pour into the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's just a huge decision that the city just has to make. It's like, are we into money or do we care about the quality of life for our constituents? And so I think that's a huge thing that we have to tap on that people don't want to talk about because it makes people uncomfortable. Rich people don't like to be uncomfortable. And so that's just what it is.
When are you running for city council?
I hope so.
That's a great question.
We need young people getting in there having these conversations.
Yeah.
And that's what my biggest concern has been since leaving office is they're not having these conversations at city council. And we used to the 8 years I was there, but they're not having that. This is pretty much open the ballot, vote, record the vote, and go on to the next one. No one even knows what they're voting on. And I'm thrilled that this mayor is taking these community meetings to hear what's being said. And these council members can be there to hear it as well. And then they can work on it together. And I know there's a real disconnect right now between the two. And I know that the mayor is strong enough to get past that. She's shown the dedication to do it. And I hope the council steps up and does the same.
Yeah.
Because our citizens, and we are them, are depending on it.
Yeah. David, what do you think some of the challenges that you see in your everyday life on the South Side?
For me, as a homeowner, city services have gone down, you know, markedly,
yeah.
Including JSO, even though they got, you know, over $500 million, it's tough to get some response from them. But other than that, the biggest problem I have, which has just been a Jacksonville problem forever, is connectivity. Everything's an island. Each shopping center, it's its own island. You got to come out and you got to get on a three-way highway to just, you know, go another block down the road. My neighborhood backs up to Tinseltown, and town center, and they never connected us up, even though we tried. I remember talking with the council member there, you know, tried for almost a year to try to get connected up, but, you know, no dice. So everything's its own little enclave, its own little island.
Yeah, that's
and it could tie together a little bit better.
That's the danger of Jacksonville, because it is so big. It's hard to, like, I think city planning, like, it's hard to think about, like, how to connect all these things, because you're juggling 20 million things when it's this big, you know?
And that's why, you know, biking and walking is tough, because you have to go out to the main thoroughfare to get over to something.
Yeah, yeah. Nana, when you think about, like, the challenges on the South Side as a business owner, what would those be for you?
Yeah, I think I agree with everyone with regards to getting from point A to B. The fact that there aren't enough sidewalks. Small businesses depend very much on foot traffic, not just the vehicles pulling into the parking lot. So it makes it difficult sometimes to get people to come in, especially the location where we're at, which is the Bay Meadows and the Phillips intersection. If a vehicle misses that turn, that's it. But if there was enough public transportation where people actually are able to walk, to take a tram, take a bus, it benefits all the businesses in the neighborhood, because you can pop into the local coffee shop and grab a coffee on your way to catch the bus. To go back on what you said about them building the South Side just for the VIP, I don't even think that should be a thing, because I lived in London. And it doesn't matter whether you earned $1 million or 20,000. We all benefited from using the train, the tram, the bus. The bus is not just there for the people who don't own vehicles. It's just a faster, greener way to travel.
Right. 'Cause
then people get to get from point A to B without having to pollute the air. And so everybody benefits. Clean air. Jacksonville has a huge influx of people coming from different states moving in. Buildings are popping up here and there, but we're not really thinking it through as to how we're going to connect all these people from point A to B.
Suzanne, am I right in when Nana brings up public transportation, like, and I've been in the city for like 40 some odd years now. And when I hear that, I agree with her 100%, but public transportation has always seemed to be an issue in Jacksonville, in the sense of, like, we can't quite get it right. Like, we make the tram and it doesn't really go anywhere. I mean, now it feels like it's a little bit of a resurgent with the Jaguars, but, you know, I remember there was a proposal many, many years ago. I can't remember. It might've been under the Delaney administration. That the proposal was, like, basically to make the buses free to help people get around, and that got defeated. It just feels like we can't quite get that public transportation issue right.
I would agree with you. It's funny, in the 70s, that's when I moved here, I actually took the public bus to Landon and home, and then I would also take it to go visit my friends. But you don't see anybody doing that anymore. Everybody has to take their child in a car and drive them to wherever they're going to go, just for the safety factor that they feel. And I think if the more we make it fast and get through and wider and faster and bigger, the less safe we feel for our kids. And so we need to pay attention to that and bring it back, bring it down. The San Marco did that with their, with Hendricks Avenue and their boulevard through there. If you look, they went in and planted medians to slow traffic down. They created traffic circles, and you feel safer now. You see more people walking and riding their bikes. They don't have any more room to do that than we do in our other neighborhoods. But because the traffic's slower and it looks safer and it's beautiful, people come out and do that. And we need to do that again and again and again, and take back and not pay homage to the car, but pay homage to the residents.
Yeah. We're going to go to the phones. We got Matthew from downtown. Matthew, how are you today?
Oh, I'm fine. Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I've been enjoying the conversation. A lot of good points made. I just want to speak, like, from our generation's standpoint, I believe that most people feel that the lack of commutability of cities, the lack of public transport and access, feels like sabotage to us. And it's hard for us to reconcile why those choices were made. I mean, the immediacy of it, the obvious short term of it seems obvious, but the long term ramifications, it seems like such a huge oversight that it seems like sabotage.
Matthew, thank you so much for your comment.
I would agree with him.
Yeah.
One of the things I used to say on council every time we do a road widening, and everybody said, well, we can't pay taxes for transportation, but we're going to widen a road, and that costs money too. And I finally one day I stood up and I said, look, if we do this, this is like me saying I'm going on a diet. I go out and buy a bigger dress and say I met my goal. We can't keep doing this. How big are we going to make this?
Yeah.
Till we can't move? And young people who don't have the resources to buy a car, pay insurance, a place to park it, especially downtown, if they don't have transportation, they're stuck.
Yeah.
When my son left and went to Houston for his position, went with the Houston Ballet. He was a starving artist, and thank God for public transportation, because there was no way he was going to have a car there.
Yeah.
And they have a great transportation system, and they're a lot like Jacksonville in how big they are, but they took time to do the transportation piece, and we have got to focus on that.
I recently was on the South Side. A friend of mine was in town, and they were staying at someone's house or whatever, and I was going to pick him up. And I got the address. I plugged it in my GPS, and like I said, I've been living in Jacksonville for 40 years, and I had no idea where this was. I followed it. It was somewhere, I think, on the South Side, like near Avenues, kind of, but like it was a whole subdivision
off Southside Boulevard.
Yes, it's massive. It's huge,
right? But you would never know.
It's huge over there.
It's huge, and I'm
driving by. You would never know that.
Never know.
And we need to start paying attention to that and creating these spaces that are already there. And that's when I talk about giving respect to these communities that have been built and the investors who bought homes that live in that area. We need to start realizing that and acknowledging their contribution and paying attention to how their front door looks.
Yeah. I was just thinking, though, that like in reference to what you were saying earlier, is that like there's a whole new, I mean, like there was like several subdivisions in there. Like it's big. And I was just wondering, like, if you don't have a car, how do you get back and forth between that area and the rest of the city?
You don't.
Yeah.
You just don't. I mean, if you try to, you better start early to get there on time, and you better expect to arrive home late and several transfers. And that's unacceptable. We need our council and our mayor's office to focus on this, because it's the next big piece. We've got everything in place. All the bricks are in place. Now we need the mortar. And that's the transportation part that connects these communities and the city to each other.
Yeah, Jacksonville, we just haven't had a vision for livability. It's just sprawl, and developers develop so that they can develop. You know, it just becomes a money game, and they just go cookie cutter. And they don't think about how what they're building is connecting to anything else or the area around them. They build that little island, right, and then they move on. Whether it's a subdivision, a neighborhood, apartment complex, or whatever it happens to be, it's about building that, and then you're done. Not how it's connected, how it's going to be used down the road. And there's nobody in the chain, especially from our city leaders, that kind of look at that and see how the entire neighborhood ties together and what can be done to improve its connectivity and, you know, its walkability, its bikeability, and a number of other things.
He's right.
Yeah, and I also think that, like, there's a huge lack of community in the South Side. So I think if you compare South Side versus the North Side, there's just a bigger sense of neighborhood, a bigger sense of community. Like, I wouldn't mind asking my neighbor for a cup of sugar. Like, I don't know if she's going to answer on the South Side. I just don't know. And I think that's also a huge thing. Like, everyone is on this every man for themselves kind of vibe. And I don't think anyone benefits from that, but also nobody really is not benefiting from it either. And so I think that is where, like, the disconnect also comes in.
I think, you know, Kalila, like, your point, like, really just reinforces what we've been talking about, that if, like, public transportation is not just a way to get from A to B, but it's also like connections with your neighbors, because if you're all riding public transportation, you get to meet people, mm-hmm. you get to know people, and suddenly, like, these connections begin to happen. But when you have a place that doesn't really have a whole lot of sidewalks, it's hard to see your neighbor walking outside and say hello to them, right? We're going to go to the phones. We've got Tiffany in downtown. Tiffany, how are you this morning?
Hi, good morning. Good morning. Thank you for this wonderful conversation. I just wanted to just add that my husband and I live downtown, and one of the things that we often complain about is, dang, why is it this skyway running on the weekend? We do get out and walk and go down Riverside Boulevard. We go to the Ram Market on the weekend. And one of the other things that we often kind of chime in on is that we're both Northside babies. And so we chose downtown so that we could stay closer to the Northside. But as you know, trying to get back and forth with our public transportation system is just not always feasible. We also, one of the things that we noticed, and I believe one of your guests said it, I was stationed at Mildenhall Air Force Base, and I totally agree. In London, it doesn't matter if you own millions or pences. You know, everybody utilized the train. And even where my daughter is in Boston, same thing. She gets around everywhere. She's a student, and so she goes everywhere on the bus and the train. And for my husband and I, who are now empty nesters, that's just not feasible. We'd love to be able to do it every year, probably twice a year. I also take the bus from downtown to A. Philip Randolph so I can go to the Melanin Market. I don't get in my car and drive. I purposely make sure I take JTA to the Melanin Market. And so I think one of the things, I don't know if this will ever happen, but I would definitely love to see that skyway kind of get resurrected, because it would just give my husband and I more options, you know, on the weekend when we want to just hang out.
Yeah. Tiffany, thank you so much for that comment. And I agree, like, you know, there have been talks for ever since the skyway got built that there was going to be more done with it. And it just doesn't seem like that ever goes anywhere. It's just conversations that don't go. I mean, I remember like maybe 10, 15 years ago, they were talking about doing something, but then the cost was too much. And a lot of times you keep hearing the idea of cost, 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 but you never hear the other side of the argument, which is like, what are we getting for that cost? And yes, it's going to cost a lot to make it happen. But if you make it happen, all the connections you get out of that, you know, outweigh what the cost is going to be. The cost is worth it.
I agree. And that's why I always fought the road expansions and not putting money towards transit. Because with road expansions, all we're doing is moving people faster in their own vehicles. So there's not going to be a community and a coming together. And when people say, well, I don't get on Skyway because it's scary or weird people ride it. Well, if we hand it over and just never ride it and don't take ownership, then that's what happens.
Yeah. And
so don't use that as an excuse, because you're part of the problem when that happens.
Right. I've ridden public transportation in pretty much in every major city in the United States, as well as London. And there's always weird people on.
Absolutely. It's part of everywhere.
I will say, there's weird
people. I know.
Everywhere.
I lived in Chicago. Same thing. Yeah. We take that, and drive downtown all the time. I mean, but there's a sense of excitement and creativity that happens through that, because it's a connection.
Yeah, absolutely. And on that note, we're going to end the panel. Thank you so much to my panelists for coming in. It was a pleasure to talk to you about the South Side. Dana Hammond, owner and chef at Jack's Bread Companies. Suzanne Jenkins, former city council member. Kalila Ritchie, college student and future politician, future city council member. And David Reed, it's good for all of you guys to see you all. And thank you so much. We will be right back after this, where we talk a little bit about quilting. Come back. And welcome back. You are listening to First Coast Connect. I'm Al Letson, sitting in the big chair in Studio 2 at WJCT. The Jacksonville Quilt Fest is an annual exhibition showcasing the art of quilt making. The event will take place at the Prime Osborne Convention Center later this week. The theme this year is So Full of Whimsy. Stacy gave some puns in the script, but I'm just going to keep going past them. I can't. With me is Sandy Foose, publicity chair of the Jacksonville Quilt Fest. And she's here to talk more. Oh, my goodness. The puns in the script. I just can't. She wants me to say Sandy is here to give a blanket statement. Like, Sandy, I'm sorry that you have to deal with these puns. How are you today?
Whimsy is full of humor, so I'm great.
All right, good. You have brought me some show and tell. I love when I get show and tell. Please tell me, what do we have here?
Well, quilts are always interesting, and they can be as varied as the people that we meet in the street. And so I brought you a few colorful opportunities to see quilts in the making. Some of these are just pieces of put together. This is a set of circles that are like a rainbow, and they have a black and white
border. Yeah, this is beautiful. I wish the listeners could see it. It's absolutely beautiful. It's just a square, but it's got so it's not a full quilt, but this will be used in a full quilt. And in the center of it, taking up most of the square, is a multicolored circle that kind of really contrasts with the black and white background. It looks beautiful.
Well, thank you. But even then, I still consider myself an amateur.
Uh-huh.
And so some of my stitching does not meet the qualifications of a judge to give it an excellent.
Really?
They might say satisfactory, but they won't say excellent for that.
I'm not a judge, but I would say it's pretty excellent. But okay.
Thank you. And then other techniques are used, and art quilts are a very special part of our quilt show, and I would love to have people come and see how artistic people can be.
Yeah.
This is a small sample of something I've done, which is a small kingfisher.
Okay.
And it's done with what's called applique, and then which are pieces of fabric that are put together, as well as thread painting. And thread painting is to enhance it with the different fabrics, different threads and colors of thread.
Gotcha. So what I'm looking at right now is another square, but this is with fabric and thread. You've created an image of a kingfisher, and it's on a branch, and it's beautiful. So would you say this is like not don't think you'd be judged well on this?
I would be judged well for the artistic design and for the quilt, for the actual choice of how I put it together,
mm-hmm.
but I would be dinged for the quality of the border, believe it or not.
So at the Jacksonville Quilt Festival, like, are there judges there? Like, explain to me exactly what's going to happen this weekend.
Well, this weekend, the quilts will be all be on exhibit by being hung up on black backgrounds or blue backgrounds, and mm-hmm. you will have rows and rows, 450 quilts that you will be able to see. And the size of them will vary all the way from a large one that would fit on a bed to a small one that's like these I've brought in as samples that are just 12 inches square. So the variety is in 10 different categories. And last week, a judge came through and carefully examined each quilt and made comments and judged it based on its quality for a number of different elements. And those prizes have been awarded already, and they will be the awards for first, second, and third place in 10 different categories, as well as best of show will be on exhibit for you.
Let me ask you, and I know this is kind of a general question, it can range, but how long does it take an average person to kind of become a master of quilting?
I don't think you ever become the complete master, but when you see the best of show, you will find someone who went to high school in Orange Park and now lives in Maine. And you will find that her quilts have been just spectacular. Mm-hmm. And she's been working all her life, and she probably works every day on these projects. But some of us, like me, I started in 2016,
mm-hmm.
and I'm beginning to be comfortable.
Yeah. So I know that there is a history of, like, and please, I'm predicating this saying like I know nothing. but I've read that there's a history of like telling stories with quilts like throughout the years. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Every quilt has a story, mm-hmm. and sometimes they come from the history of like during the Civil War when there were underground railroad paths that were provided for people, and they were stories on quilts. And then sometimes they have their celebration quilts that will identify a person or someone that needs to be honored. Or there's cultural quilts like the Hawaiian quilts, and you'll find things that are made from each different thing. But today, quilts are just anything you want. You celebrate your high school graduation. You celebrate new babies. You provide quilts of valor for veterans, and quilters are tremendously generous and give a lot to the community.
So let's run through some more of these samples that you got here. So
This is my whimsical one that is also not entered in the quilt show, but it's called "If Pigs Could Fly, So Could I," said the elephant. And I think it's pretty whimsical.
Yeah, I love this one. So this one has a pig with wings, a sun in the sky, and then an elephant with wings. And under it looks like trees, right? Like it's the roofs of trees that they're flying over. I love this one. I love this one so much. It is whimsical. I can make a blanket statement that this is a very whimsical quilt. So now this is just a square, right? So when you're making a whole quilt, there are several of these, not several, but I mean a lot of these, right?
Quilts can be made because you're the designer or mm-hmm. because you're just the color coordinator or because you are the creator of something new, or you're using a pattern and somebody else has come up with how do you put it all together. Mm-hmm. This is a large example with a very famous fabric artist named Kay Fassett, and you will see that this quilt has numbers of little squares that are offset on a white background, and the quilting itself, which is the thread that ties mm-hmm. the top, the back, and the middle batting together, and that quilting is shaped like flowers in this particular example.
Yeah. So when can the listeners go to the festival and see all this stuff?
This is Thursday, Friday, and Saturday this week. It starts at 9:00 and goes till 5:00 every day, and it's at the Prime Osborne Convention Center.
All right. Is there an entrance fee?
It is a fee. There's $15. However, this is an all-volunteer managed organization, and the Quilt Fest has bought out the parking lot just to make sure that everybody can afford to come in.
All right. Sandy Foos, Publicity Chair of the Jacksonville Quilt Fest, thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
And we'll be right back.
Life South Community Blood Centers, providing blood and patient services to the local hospitals, serving patients in this community. Donating blood with Life South helps save lives. More at lifesouth.org to find a blood drive near you. The Florida Star newspaper has turned 72 years old and is still serving communities as a thoughtful small business. You won't believe what we are doing next. Stay in the know by picking up a Florida Star newspaper or logging on to thefloridastar.com.
On live radio, things don't always go according to plan.
But, I'm sorry, that's my dog.
Ooh. Is that Buster? Hello, Buster.
Currently $250,000 per account.
We should know it sounds like your dog likes to talk about the FDIC too.
I mean, Martinez, things might go to the dogs sometimes, but NPR and this station stay focused on you. Here's how to support us.
Please call 353-9528 or visit wjct.org/radio.
Scott Tong. So, how to fix inequities in household chores among couples? There's a card game for that.
I wish that I could tell you that when women earn as much or more, that this issue goes away. But when women out-earn their male partners, they actually do more housework.
The Fair Play Card Game. Next time on Hear It Now.
Today at 2 on WJCT News 89.9.
The road ahead for many in Maui will be a long one. But how will its rich history shape what comes next? The beauty of Maui and the other islands is unmatched. The spirit of aloha is unique. But how much do we know about Hawaii's past? And what makes the island's culture so special and so often overlooked by those who visit? That's next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Hey, hey, welcome back. You are listening to First Coast Connect on WJCT. I'm Al Letson, sitting in the big chair live from Studio 2. And the Jacksonville Jaguars opened up their 2023 season with a big win over division rivals, the Indianapolis Colts. With me is our very own Josh Torres. Josh, how you doing, man?
I'm doing all right, Al. It's Victory Monday, so I'm always doing all right when we get to talk about a big Jags win.
That was a fun game.
It was a very fun game, but I think a lot of Jags fans, and myself included, I talked about this last week where I really felt like this week, it really felt like a trap game, like a game where everybody all over the place, except for Indianapolis, were saying the Jags are going to win this easy, you know, yada, 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 rookie quarterback in Indianapolis. They're missing Jonathan Taylor, their best running back. It just really felt like a trap game to me, a game where we're expected to win, but something's going to happen where they just completely fall apart. Indianapolis is going to come in with a lot more aggressiveness. They're going to come in to say, hey, everybody thinks we're not going to do well this year. Let's prove them wrong. And, you know, for a while there, it really, really felt like that. It really, truly felt like that, especially going late into the game when that really insane moment in the third quarter where Trevor Lawrence fumbled the ball, Tank Bigsby picked it up, then he fumbled it, and then the Colts proceeded to recover it and run in for a touchdown to take the lead very late in the game. Mm-hmm. But luckily, you know, a lot of resiliency in the team, and just it really showed that this team's not going to back down, they're not going to stop fighting, and they did come out with a W, and so it is great to see a W. There's obviously a lot of work that's going to need to be done over the course of the next few weeks, the next few days, because they have a big, very, very big matchup coming up this weekend that we're going to get into. But, you know, it's still great to have come into Monday with a win.
How is Trevor Lawrence as a quarterback? How did he do in this game?
He did relatively well. He did have an interception, obviously had the fumble that we talked about. But he still did well. He still showed a lot of poise. His offensive line was a little shaky. That was very well known kind of going in, is that the offensive line really needed to step up and allow him more time to make decisions. But still, even when he was kind of on the run, he showed a lot of poise, kept his eyes downfield. And the one player that I think we're all talking about right now, and yesterday he really showed that he appears to be as advertised, was Calvin Ridley. Coming off of being away from football for something like a year and a half, you know, he stepped away from when he was with the Atlanta Falcons to focus on his mental health, then got suspended because for gambling on NFL games all of last year before being traded to the Jags. But he came out yesterday and had 8 receptions for 101 yards, including a touchdown catch. And some of the catches he made were in double coverage. There was a play early in the game where Trevor Lawrence threaded it between 2 defenders and Calvin Ridley caught it and proceeded to make both defenders run into each other. Yeah. You know, yeah. It really shows you, like, he really was as advertised as far as we can tell. Obviously, it's game one, but, you know, it still is very good. Trevor, again, had a lot of poise. Even when they did end up going down in the game, he still showed that being able to keep the team calm and get them down the field and into scoring position, which, you know, over his first year, really struggled with that. Last year, you know, started coming out of the gates, but then started to kind of pick it up. And this shows, again, that he is still progressing and showing, like, hey, even if we're down, if I have the ball in my hands, I'm not going to let us lose. I'm going to make sure that we get down into a good position to take the lead.
And how are we looking against the Kansas City Chiefs? That's a big test coming up.
That is going to be a very, very big test. And, you know, I actually was talking to somebody yesterday about it, and a lot of people might say, the Jags, you know, should have, you know, annihilated the Colts. And, you know, we look on Thursday Night Football when Kansas City lost to the Detroit Lions, and a lot of people were very high on the Lions and very, you know, let's say mean about Kansas City, because, you know, Kansas City has dominated the league for the last few years. And the one thing I keep telling people is you're never going to bet against Patrick Mahomes. Mm-hmm. You know, he is easily the best quarterback in the league. This is who everybody's looking to have on their team. And even though this past weekend Kansas City didn't have Travis Kelce, they still don't have Chris Jones because he's still looking to get a new contract. Said he's willing to sit out until at least week 8, which is the latest he can sit out before he forfeits his entire salary. It's going to be interesting to see if Travis Kelce's back, if they are able to get Chris Jones back in the building. But even then, still, Kansas City is very, very dangerous. And so the Jags cannot take this lightly. But if they're able to pull out the win, man, I think everybody's really going to start believing that this team is going to be going places.
What's your prediction?
I think it's going to be a very, very close game. I'm hoping for something like a 24-21 Jags win, but I'm really hoping for a very close game.
Josh Torres, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
And that is our program. Thanks to all our guests and callers. Our executive producer is Music Maestro David Luckin. Our producer is Stacy the Brain Bennett. Our director, the Steven Spielberg of the operation, Brady Corum. Excuse me. Brady, I always mess it up. I'm sorry. Our theme music is performed by Club De Belugas. If you have a question or comments about First Coast Connect, send an email to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. I'm Al Ledson. Thank you so much for tuning in. And remember, y'all, keep your heart open for Duval and each other. And I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.